Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening. You've found Masonic Effects, and it's a pleasure that we've found you again. I think it's time to settle in on notions talking about our legacy, 21st century. Is that reasonable? Just put this in a bit of context, brethren. Here, again, it's been a while since I've done this, so I give a little shout-out to current listeners. And you can imagine, our listening audience around the world changes. It doesn't remain. So I have to admit, there are some countries that are constantly represented. And apart from all of the media attention of happening about our neighbors to the south, America has always been following. I won't say all of America, but we've always constantly for years had followers from the United States and from Canada, where I'm located. Yes, pleasant little country that suffers angst, you know, that country that strives hard, and where we seem to still be grateful for what we have. Mm-hmm. Here, listen to so when I speak about, you know, legacy and things like that, I'm certainly not deriding any nation. We have listeners sitting in from Japan and Russia and Pakistan and Zambia and Greece, United Kingdom, the United States, Brazil and Canada. So for me to even pretend that I speak for all of you would be absurd. Unless I'm thinking about the universal properties that we uphold, that we share, when we sit down to examine our values, our ethics, our practices, and hold ourselves to account, and decent and law-abiding people like yourself, and I'm not talking about affiliation with the different governments. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the man, yourself, the man who has a strong moral rudder, who knows the difference between right and wrong without being told, that man. And I'm not suggesting I don't know anymore if we can convert anybody to that way of thinking. Those people, what we hold in common, the curiosity, the intelligence to examine and to learn from everything that we do, not just this. I think it's an artifact of mercantilism that we had focused much more on victory and winning and you know being number one rather than the process, to our own discredit. There's so much more going on in the world than winning and losing, so much more at every moment with every breath. So let's approach this with a general sense of well-being. From around the world, I think we can look at our collective legacy, the performance of Freemasonry, at such a level of abstraction that it's almost meaningless. And we would need to be able to say something like an effort, it is a process of enhancement, enhancing the human mind and experience. Now, if I said that, you might, rightly so, ask for the skeptics and the Stoics will certainly take me to task. Could you offer us some proof? Right. Is history just what I say it is? You know, or do I need to prove it? Well, of course I need to prove it. In other words, is history just opinion, or is it factual? Well, around the world, and as we know, it's both. It's both. So, what do we do with this? How do we deal with this? Well, we look for consistencies, and the way we do that is by the way that. Sciences has progressed. We replicate something, doing something once might be a one-off, might be coincidence. It's just, we could say, well, it's caprice, it's luck, it's good fortune. Or we could say, it's happened because of manipulation of the facts. It's like coming up with a list of a thesis and then replicating the situations to prove the thesis by manipulating the processes. Well, that's not legitimate. It happens, but it's not legitimate. What we look for is an element of objectivity, so that if I can write down my hypothesis and how we went about attempting to prove it, the methodology, and you replicate that methodology and you get a same result, then we know that we're onto something. And the more, and you know, the validation that it comes when these theories are and hypotheses are replicated more and more and more, it increases the validity of them until we... And we're ever searching for that anomaly that doesn't fit in. Now, the rashness of the world, we would say, right, if you're thinking right and wrong, well, that must be wrong. We delight in jumping all over that one anomaly and referring to it as wrong. And in fact, that's a construct of our own approach to thinking. It's telling us something, but we don't know quite what. Unless we're rash and just jump in. What it doesn't tell us is whether it's a legitimate finding, whether it's an accurate finding, whether it's or what it's demonstrating. What does it tell us? And that requires a thoughtful approach, a thoughtful reassessment. and a rethink of, so we want to validate that the methodology was followed, okay, which is fair. But what happens if it occurs a second time? And there's different examples of this through science that we can fall back on as an example of this way of thinking. Pull this together. If we try to pull this together, look at the fact. If I'm trying to demonstrate the fact of the statement of influence that I presume Masonry has in the world, is it legitimate? Is it fair? I say that, you know, it's for the betterment of humanity and mankind. Can I prove that? Mate, is this just self-serving? Is this just self-serving rhetoric? You say you're wonderful, the sun shines out of our world, because I say it does. Well, I tend to think you can see the answer to that is no, that's not proof. That's a statement. Now, since I've said it, I would need to prove it. Are good men who gather for camaraderie a demonstration of that proof? And I'm thinking, the good men get together in friendly conversation all over the world, whether they're Freemasons or not. They may be sitting in a cafe on a hot night in the Middle East, sipping coffee or tea with friends and listening to a poet regale the room with an epic story of their culture and the earlier days. And is that Masonic? Well, I tend to think that's a bit of it's much more generic in thinking of Masonry as a taxonomy. It's a category that, you know, all these behaviors that we cherry pick are Masonic in nature because we cherry pick them. I think the evidence of the evidence of our impact will be known by our performance, the deeds. And not only that, I don't say that just to mean that we organize. We're all going to go out and we're going to become environmental advocates. That's off the top of my head. I think it's the difficulty of proving my earlier conjecture or statement of fact is to be found in individual performance. I say, and we say to each other when our lodge convenes, it's how I live when I walk out the door. Do I exhibit those values, and do I watch to see if those my behavior, my influence, has desired the intended effect? Does it make the world any better? Or am I trying to convince myself of that so to assuage me from any sense of guilt? Well, if guilt is the motivator, then so be it. If it's trying to prove your worth in a world that has taught you that you're worthless, well, so be it. If it's that, if you have a sense of entitlement that leans toward self-sacrifice and public duty, well, so be it. So be it. What holds all of those kind of people together, like you and me, is our belief in each other. It's a belief that when I fail in my duty, you will influence and help pick me up, and I will do the same. And when we find need, we will do something about it. And globally, it would be difficult to, what would it take, intruding into your personal life to see what and find out what you did, what you intended, and then to examine the impact of that. How, I don't know how that would happen without it being sort of very Orwellian kind of a world. If I know, if somebody is bragging about their exploits around me, I tend to not be interested in them at all. Now, there's different reasons for that, but I tend not to be really interested in that. What really excites me is the person that has mastered the art of subtlety. I just find that. I love understated talent. I just love that. But if would I do away with superlatives about our finest researchers and scientists and performers? No, of course not. Don't be silly. But my preference is, and I think it's fair to say for all of us, we do like the story of the underdog that prevails. We do like the story of the person that has been mistreated, who shows generosity toward their oppressors. I say that in the same breath as I say I have no tolerance for despots and no tolerance for racists and none of that. I don't trust political division. I don't, because I've learned that it's prone to manipulation, and I am a commodity. I've been my attention has gaining my attention and influencing my thinking has been weaponized. We have these lofty concepts, but apart from, I don't live lofty concepts. I get by the way I can, the best way I can. I try to uphold my responsibilities, and to be, and the secret is I try to enjoy myself in the meantime, and reframe the world around me in terms that are more consistent with our beliefs, and it's not perfect. But it doesn't. It's not escapism, but it is helpful. Learning when the mind. I find that Freemasonry is the reminder or the challenge to open your mind, open our minds to be thinking outside of our comfort zone, and. And then examine what that actually means. I don't think it's a matter of trying to explain how we do that. If a person doesn't get that, when they hear the idea, if they don't get it, I don't think that it's possible. You get the idea that there's something to be gained by challenging yourself or being challenged or allowing yourself to be challenged. It is, I think, easier said than done. When we are faced with an aggressor, an aggressive critic, it takes some control of our wits to be understanding, to be reflective. To acknowledge it and own our responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is saying something untoward about the Masonic order, there's probably a grain of validity to it. But does that mean, and one of the things I always liked about Masonry was this sense that we don't need to bash and crash and push back at every single criticism, but I also deeply respect what has happened in the United Grand Lodge of England, where there's an understanding that it's been enough. Our critics are saying things that it's just snowballed. Enough is enough. Yes, like we need to have some level of response. But carefully managed response that that is measured. And I know, never complain, never explain, but here, offer understanding. Explanations can sound like excuses to a lot of people, and rightfully so. You know, that happens. And people these days, would we think that the media has actually influenced the values of people around? Has the media then influenced your values and my values? Well, if I'm going to say that about you, oh, you're a product of the times, then so am I. So where do I go to learn more about this? I look for diversions and I look for variations. So if I go through this list of countries, nations, where we have people tuning in to Masonic Effects, I would want to know, in Zambia, tell me your impressions, please, of Masonry and the performance of Masonry through the years, and the performance of Masonry in the moment. And I would do the same with Greece, and I would not be completely surprised if there was overlap and differences, and certainly in Japan, and certainly with Russia or the United States. You can imagine that I would see different facets. I would hear different facets. Yes, in the individual lived experience, impossible to speak for tens of thousands of brethren, of course. But that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the one mind to help me to understand best that they can. And I, in turn, will be looking for the overlap, the complementarity. It happens so far. It brings me to to this way of thinking of just, did we ever exist, this commentary today? Masonry, we could leave off and just tail off and say Masonry is about ideals. And, you know, no one lives an ideal. We may all live striving and working very hard to grab the golden ring, but the effort of a good life is that we constantly strive to grab that ring. What would happen if we were successful we had it? What would we do next? Oh, well, just like you, I need to describe what that gold ring means. We all know what I'm talking about with this story of the gold ring, but we also know that each one of us has our own examples. So hesitate to explain the examples that I've experienced, because I don't know if they would be intended to influence you. You have your own. You have your own examples. And if I offer it up as an anecdote, the complication we have is that the anecdote is always partial. It's always filtered. And is it accurate? Well, only as far as it goes. Only as far as it goes. With the limits of recall. And then there's my intent. If I'm telling you about something fascinating from my past, because everything about me is fascinating, as you, oh God, then what's the point? We can't go back. It's interesting to hear that I found something fascinating, but so what? And really, so what? What difference does it make in the moment, in the presence, where decisions are made and actions are taken? The future hasn't happened yet. The past is gone yesterday. It exists as a memory. But then tell me, talk to me about reality. Is it still reality after it's happened? Ooh. Well, why not open that conversation up? You did this to me. The world has done this to me by suggesting that the universe, this darn James Webb telescope, the universe is infinite. Oh, my goodness. I was sort of happy with Big Bang and the universe expanding. I was sort of okay with that. But now, physicists around the world are sharpening their pencils, rethinking our knowledge, you know, adding this new piece of these new bits of information, things that ought not to exist that do exist. Well, I've been saying that for a very long time here on Masonic Effects. Betting men would not have put a wage on us existing 300 years. I think that we would form this order based on self-awareness. Come on, who would possibly believe that? And while I may deride the pettiness of some, you know, the personality clashes where people are just have lost or never been exposed to Masonry in the first place, the conduct, how we conduct ourselves with each other in order to probe understanding without over-personalizing and getting into clashes. That striving for a good life still goes on. I need you to help. And today, when I'm talking about history, I'm also talking about what we take away, and whether or not the influences of history can be brought forward. And if that's what we're doing, are we living in the past? Help me out. This might help out too. It's Bill Evans, just a mighty piece. It was gentle and thoughtful. Here, help me here, brethren. Did we ever exist? I was toying with the idea of Masonry, the ideas. Masonry provides a framework to unite. So often we overlook vital points revealed in ritual that we fail to re-examine. I see that here. Of course, not in your lodge. Masonry helps our understanding by presenting archetypes that increase the magnification. This makes ideas more easily accessed and compared. Never to be an enthusiast is one of them. Yes, we've experienced rashness in our lodges. We've also found a chorus of enthusiasts. What we haven't noticed is the place for passivity. Can you imagine a laboratory run by enthusiasts? How many missteps would be sent out attempting to best the competition as advertised? Hubris was once so undesirable, Rome outlawed it. Bragging. When the Senate changed that law, we now know the decline of Rome was underway. As Masonry is aiming us at unifying the forces that divide, it also tosses us a lifeline. When in doubt, do nothing. When discovering, assume a passive manner so not to cloud our progress. Perhaps without saying it, passivity is the antidote to egoism. We aren't trying to overcome the problems of ego by killing it. as much as we by taming it. Passivity does that. But I'm not sure that's the right word. Can we then begin to see the effect of male ego driving culture? Masonry tells us without telling us. Recall yourself sitting at the chessboard, revealing your thinking to your opponent through your reactions to moves. Not a word. When we overdo enthusiasm, it becomes meaningless. Like cheering loudly each season for a sports team that can't match expectations of its diehard fans. The stillness of passive manner is considered an oddity. It is self-control to examine in thought options and then act on which is best and at a time that optimizes effect. We call that temperance. It's a principle. What if the lost knowledge never existed, but we need to think so to motivate thinking? What if what was lost is found within? Oh, if that were the case, we would be thinking outside the reach of religion or politics. Free thinking. We can't have that. So messy. Huh. Imagine that. Thelonious Monk. It's such a strong following. My goodness. I'm offering a poetry today. Why poetry? It's just an exploration, brethren. If the study of the classical arts, if arts and sciences, is connected with enhancing the quality of my life, my meager life, my thoughts, if it's to improve my understanding of you and people around me, if it's to help me focus on the things that are important and significant and to let the other things pass me by. Everything is not important and critical. And I have decisions to make, and I want to understand priorities, and I want to understand my own priorities. And I hope that I haven't sunk into opinion that has, you know, robbed me of the calculations of ethics and an understanding of logic. I hope I haven't just reflexively fallen into using opinion. Oh, because I'm an old guy, therefore I don't have more, I don't have any original thoughts. I'm just going to be, you know, impress you with these, by spouting opinion. No, I'm not quite sunk into ideology. I know. Isn't masonry an ideology? Ooh, not now. I like to think that masonry does help us to enhance our experience. And I'm not, it's interesting because it masonry does this, I believe, without ordering. It's not compelling us. There are times when I need to be looking at detail and I want to be looking at another, where I need to keep the big picture and the aim in focus. What's the point of a lodge meeting? And here it really helps me to understand how to react and act. The point of a lodge meeting is to be in this space, be present, to offer a presence of mind, and enjoy the refinements of the atmosphere that we've created around us. And whatever that is, who am I to tell you what the refinements are in your life or with your lodge mates? Perhaps the refinement is simply to be acknowledged and to be recognized. And far be it from me to suggest that's ego-driven. All people like to be acknowledged, everybody. But for what? Another question, isn't it? What for? That's why I like the thinking through the ages. I pick up these notions, like you do, of about phenomena that do something, that offer us something. Like, and it came out in the 70s. You remember when moms and dads were playing classical music in the nursery, with the idea that this was soothing and enhancing the cognitive process and development of their infant. Lovely, lovely. Not everybody has that opportunity, but if you did, hey, what have you got to lose? What have you got to gain? But then again, doesn't the arts, the refined music, have that same effect on you and me? Well, I wanted to know if it did. I wanted to know if I wasn't born with beautiful art galleries and art around me. No. I was born into a household where the artwork matched the drapes. because it was just part of the formula. You had these paintings that matched the furniture. And I say that lovingly. But the influence, you know, the first time, or were you impressed when you went to, instead of just being a bit of the, you know, offering the insouciance of the teenage mind, you actually caught yourself being with a glimmer of maturity, looking at art and wondering, oh, what the artist was trying to elicit, what were they trying to bring forward in your thinking or your emotion. Well, that in itself was a bit of a revelation that would be the intent of the sculptor or the art painter or the singer or the musician. And it's not to say that this can't be found in popular music, but I don't know that it is. So I needed a base for my thinking. So the base was to look at what other people, that's where I started, what did the world and other people say was enduring, what music and art was enduring. And that's where I started because, you know, my popular music came and went. And over the years, how much of it is remembered or recalled or elicits that if ever you've had that sense of frisson, it's just oof, how I've been to plays, but when I sit in an audience with Lear or Hamlet, there's something that goes on. There's a chemistry that William tapped into that he shares, and I can see it time and time again. I don't need to just experience it once. I listen to Puck differently when I see different productions, and when the tragedy of Juliet hits me, it's like every time it's new. And then the calculation, it was avoidable. Look what pride did, huh? For me. And what would this way of thinking do to a mind? Well, let me try to be the judge of that by attempting it. It's like, what is the effect of exercise? Well, do you want to think about it? Well, the best way to figure that out is by doing it. And do I now? I do it by trying to add some beauty to it. I work in my garden. So I want my garden to be beautiful, because that's how I exercise. It's like, can I exercise and rather just this sweaty old dude running down the putting on kilometers? I don't know. The only way I'm going to do that is by driving slowly. The old knees, you know what I mean? But how can I, you know, combine the two? Well, I couldn't, or I wouldn't, if I didn't think about it. So poetry fits into that. Yeah. Poetry here. This is an abstract from the Academica, International Multidisciplinary Research Journal of January 2016. Now check this out. Poetry, the highest form of literature, influences us because it shows different shades of human beings. In fact, poetry is one of the most ancient arts and also the product of human imagination. It expresses different feelings such as friendship and love, death, and other human emotions. In literature, poetry stands first even today because poetry has such power to influence this world. Poetry still dominates other forms of literature such as novel, drama, short story. Poetry is taught in schools and colleges across the world. The reason is that poetry can tap the emotions of students and their power of imagination. And when it comes to English literature, poetry is the dominant form of literature from Chaucer's period to modern English period. In the history of English literature, poetry has dominated other forms of romantic in Romantic period, Pre-Raphaelite period, the metaphysical school of poets, the classical movement. Thus, poetry has a special place in English literature rather than other forms. Oh, Captain, my Captain. It's been a long time. It's a long time getting around to Walt Whitman. Now, keep in the back of your mind, hegemony. It's different today. It's different today. And influence, yeah? Influence. Hegemony is the political, economic, and military predominance of one state over other states. In ancient Greece, you know, 8th century to 6th century, 8th century BC to 6th century AD, hegemony denoted the political military dominance of the city-state over other city-states. In the 19th century, hegemony denoted the social and cultural predominance of ascendancy. Predominance by one group with a society or milieu. And a group or regime which exerts undue influence within a society. Oh, and this is where theories of imperialism, the hegemonic order, dictates the internal politics and the societal character of the subordinate states. It denotes the geopolitical and cultural predominance of one country over others. In Marxist philosophy, the very fine Jewish mind, Antonio Gramsci defined cultural hegemony as the ruling class's domination of the value system and mores of a society. So think about the influences, and it becomes quite apparent here. We're talking about the narrator in a poem addressing the captain and says that the ship that they are sailing has won and that victory is theirs. This is about the death, the assassination. It's the metaphor, the death of Abraham Lincoln. It's written in 1865. The poet just wasn't going to let the greatness of this thinker go. It's one of those written to mourn his death. But I'd like you to, as you hear this, think about the influence. His record was not perfect, but neither his life perfect. That's an idea. But here, if you're unfamiliar with this, this is well-known fact that Whitman wrote this poem after 5 days after the end of the American Civil War, and that ended in 1865. It's the 4 years. And the Union's cause, victory, Abraham Lincolnship. He wrote some other poems about it. Oh, Captain, my Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won. The port is near. The bells I hear. The people all exulting. While follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But, oh, heart, 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 oh, the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold and dead. Oh, captain, my captain, rise up and hear the bells. Rise up, for you the flag is flung, for you the bugle trills, for you bouquets and ribboned wreaths, for you the shores are crowding. For you they call, the swaying mass, their eager faces turning. Here, captain, dear father, this arm beneath your head. It is some dream that on the deck you've fallen, cold and dead. My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse or will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip, the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells. But I, with mournful tread, walk the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead. Then near the port, the narrator's telling us, you can hear the bells, it's a celebration. And here he's dead. They're waiting for the captain, though. It's not that the narrator doesn't know he's dead, he does. He tries to wake him up. He just wishes that this is a dream. He asks the captain to rise and hear the joyful sound of the bells that celebrate their victory. And in the end, the narrator accepts the fact that his captain is dead. So he mourns out loud. My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. Now that the ship is safe in the homeland, he walks with great grief inside him. And he walks away from the deck through the people who were celebrating by ringing the bells louder. Does it make sense? Whitman wrote and exposed a rawness, an emotion, a reaction to a death. Was he? I don't think it's about right or wrong. It's about where it fits. Abraham Lincoln, we know that he tried to free the slaves. Oh my. Oh my. Thank you. Yeah, where were you in 1988 when that was? That was recorded. It came from the Moonlight Club in Macerata, Italy, November 24th, for those that matter. That was a show in 1985, and they did it later. I'll put a little history, gentlemen, ladies, brethren. We've been carrying on with the background influence, in the background, this influence of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, that very, very interesting Swiss-born philosopher, and still influential in many circles. Eh? Rousseau, just briefly here, for those that don't have his reference in front of them. He was a believer in the plasticity of human nature. That means it could change, yeah? It could stretch. Rousseau holds that good laws make for good citizens. So, sort of, it is a contrast to that the noble savage notion that had been popular earlier. He's one of the most influential during the Enlightenment in 18th century Europe. So, Rousseau, Jean-Jacques. You'll hear him mention when the social contract is brought up, that relationship between us and government. Here we're just talking about the French lodges in the previous show in the 1770s and the rhetoric of the Roussonian rhetoric. You know, we want, and you've heard me echo some of this here, these ideas that our Constitution offers us protections. I see it that way. I don't find it to restrict. If I was to refer to this as a restriction, I would think, well, the 88 keys on a piano are restricted because who's to say there should be 88? Well, there was a time when it hadn't been determined that a piano would be 88 keys. So what was left? Well, so I don't consider that restrictive. A sonnet. You've heard that I do enjoy a sonnet, the framework. It's being able to express ideas within that framework. There's others. You don't have to appreciate and write your work or think it in that kind of compact. You don't have to at all. But for those who do, it's a form of discipline of a sort, just like our language is a form of disciplining our thoughts. You didn't think that the human mind thinks in words, do you? It functions in words? That's a very interesting assumption. Not too sure where that came from. Well, I know where that came from. Every lodge in every town had an order. And they, in France, they were elaborating on Rousseau in order to drown out some of the critics. And it was his task, the orator's task, to make eloquent pronouncements on Masonic ideals. Hasn't gone away, has it? Invariably, a host of other sentiments, some far away from Masonic versions of Roussonian reform, got expressed by mid-century. For example, Prussian brothers believed that they already lived in an epoch that banished fanaticism, an era of philosophy and reason, and hence of the true happiness of men. They also gloried in the enlightened and militaristic prowess of Frederick the Great. They proclaimed him a great hero and imagined themselves as living in a golden age, governed by a king more valiant than Alexander. They celebrated his day of birth, his achievements, and even by implication, his unprovoked seizure of Silesia in 1740. He was described as a hero prince and a philosopher who in the German Empire assures the glory and longevity of Freemasonry. He in turn responded by saying that The society works only to germinate and fructify all sorts of virtues in my states. This is, I think, the point of Rousseau. The Masonic adoration of Frederick II, who was a Freemason, was repeated outside of Germany. It even made its way into the pocket almanacs, usually published in French and carried by the most ordinary of brothers. Modern-day Masonic belief has it that Frederick invented the most famous and last of the Masonic degrees, the 33rd. Ooh. 18th century Masonic records do trace it back to the 1760s and attribute it to Frederick. This was one of the most aristocratic and authoritarian of all the 18th century degrees, claiming its mythic origin with the Knights Templar and designating its initiate as Sovereign Grand Commander. If Frederick did invent the degree, it was the least he could have done given the adulation that the society heaped upon him. To the Masonic orators of Berlin, he was the father of his subjects, an Achilles, Titus, and Solon all in one. But Frederick was not the only monarch to enjoy rapturous praise. It was bound to happen, wasn't it? That we would get around to this. They were there. There were presents. There were presents. Mm-hmm. Here. Whether we accept all of these influences, whether we read this as part of the legend, the historic legends, or fact, it's part of our. It's something that we can move through and understand and apply, or not. Did we think that Frederick the Great produced this 33rd degree? Well, in our applications, it means something different than the way history is recording it. The influence, how much does it matter? Well, you know, I have a very dear and lovely friend who is, as we get older, he's almost desperate to find his roots, his genealogical roots. And he's fascinated by it. And I grant it, well, that's beautiful. You know, it's wonderful. Are you or I doing something similar when we're exploring the roots of masonry like this, like looking at the influences? That's all we're doing, is looking at influences. And the reason why we're doing it is to see, I think, to question for ourselves whether the work is still with us today. Well, monarchs have fallen out of favor. They've become more of a, you know, what do you say, the monarchists? Are they, is it a fetish? Is it the recognition of imperialism? I don't know. Does it work on an individual basis? But am I afraid of what the monarch says or thinks? Hell no. Do I respect living history? Hell yes. And do I like pomp and circumstance? You know I do. But that's a small part of the history. It's the other side that I have difficulty reconciling, the effects on vulnerable populations and even on our use of the land and water and air. Like you, I tend to be more optimistic, more leaning into it. I want the solutions. And the solution, time and time again, that I come around to is learning, education, if you want to call it that. The more educated a person is, the more they're going to be weighing what's happening around them, making their own decisions. And I think that's wonderful. Agency, I don't always agree, you know, with the masses. Sometimes it's troubling. Yeah. And sometimes it's just completely stupid, like the things that the masses will say or do. But then I don't know if I would have it any other way. I certainly wouldn't. I would have a more difficult time if my thoughts were offered out there, my governance was by authority and penalty. That would not be consistent with my notion of the liberality of Freemasonry. But there you have it. How do I say, am I speaking on both sides of my mouth? I have a respect for the Constitution. I like the idea of the social contract. Yes, yes. And do I think that it influences us for the better? Yes, I do. Does it impose ideas and interpretations on me? No, not a jot. No. Sitting and talking with you is where I find the most wonderful and amazing influences. Your readings, your particular sense of and joy or enthusiasm for what you've pulled together, your findings. That's what it's influence. And then we have the beauty, we call it fanciful, that we have legend mixed in with a factual history. And then you rightfully can say, who's writing that history? They're writing their own history, aren't they? Their own version of it. And is it misogyny? Well, probably. And does that need to be corrected? Absolutely. And are we doing it? Well, take a look around. Yeah, we are. Thank you very, very much for sitting in today. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We have to go now. I look forward to being with you again in a week's time. I hope that you will continue to commit those random acts of Masonic kindness. No, seriously, do it seriously. Do it thoughtfully. That's it, you know, and do it purposefully. And I'll be with you again soon. Here's Stan Getz to take us away east of the sun. Oh.